Hello, everyone, and welcome to episode 12 of the Playoff Push podcast. I hope you all enjoyed the NFL recap for week four yesterday. If you haven't checked it out, be sure to check it out after this episode. However, this is going to be more of an unusual episode. Normally, we have a topic that we focus on, or we have a live interview with someone. But this episode's a different version of that interview-esque episode, because I had the opportunity to ask a few questions to Major League Baseball legend Curtis Granderson. Now, Mr. Granderson, he played for my Yankees for four seasons, played for the Mets for four, the Tigers for six. Overall, a 16-year MLB veteran, three-time All-Star, Silver Slugger, Roberto Clemente winner, 47.2 wins above replacement in his career. So this is a guy who's in the majors for a long time, played for quite a few teams, and was able to accumulate great enough stats to be known all across the country. So I was so honored to be able to ask him these questions. Huge shout out to Mr. Granderson himself for answering them, as well as the Curtis Granderson Foundation for assisting me through this whole process. Be sure to help support their cause at curtisgrandersonfoundation.org. Super helpful, great cause. It's just amazing to be able to help with it. But this isn't going to be too long of an episode, so we got to get right into those three questions that I was able to ask. But logically, you know, as I'm a massive Yankees fan, I had to start it off with asking Mr. Granderson what his experience was like playing baseball in the Big Apple.
So I get traded to the Yankees the year after they win the 2009 World Series. And all of a sudden, what's that going to look like for me coming from the Detroit Tigers, now being the Yankees, the Pinstripes, the Bronx? If you don't know baseball, you have heard of the Yankees. So not only that popularity, but the pressure of a championship, all those things. First and foremost, when given the opportunity to get my jersey number, remember, I was number 28 in Detroit. And Joe Girardi currently was wearing number 27 for trying to win the 27th World Championship. Well, he had done that. Now he was looking to wear number 28 in search of a 28th championship. So when they told me that story and they said, well, we'll give you 28. I said, whoa, I'm not going to take 28 and we don't win and people put that blame on me. So Girardi, you have it. You keep it. I actually ended up going with number 14, which was my high school number and also the same number my dad wore when he played softball. So that's why I wore number 14 for the Yankees. But the good thing about coming to that team and that team in particular, you still had Jeter, Posada, Rivera, and Pettit. So those four, a lot of eyes were on them. Not to mention you had A-Rod and CeCe and Cano and Teixeira and Swisher. So there were just names and lots of them and big names. So a lot of the pressure wasn't necessarily on me because all the focus was on them. I was just a piece to kind of come in and try to fit in. And especially knowing I was going to be there for a few years, it kind of took some of that pressure off. And I think it's the reason why I played so well there. If you had to face anyone in those lineups, are you going to face somebody that's got potentially 600 home runs and A-Rod, a future Hall of Famer and Derek Jeter, somebody that's a switch hitting with over 400 home runs and Teixeira or Cano, or myself who's coming over and not necessarily known as a power guy? So a lot of pitchers, I think, chose to attack me, and I liked hitting fastball. So I think all that worked in my favor, not to mention that Yankee Stadium was small in right field. Remember, I didn't build Yankee Stadium. I came there after the new Yankee Stadium was built. I just happened to take advantage of it. So all in all, there was, of course, pressure. You're going to one of the most popular franchises in all of sports. But in general, I think all those other factors from the names there and the track record that they brought in allowed me to come in and just kind of fit in nicely over there.
Now, to me, that's very nice insight from Mr. Granderson. Of course, 4 years in New York, the Big Apple, the team that everyone knows when you think of Major League Baseball. It's going to be the Yankees probably 80% of the time. So a very historic franchise. He's coming in after getting traded, thinking, what could I possibly bring to this team? It's so loaded. You got Jeter, you got A-Rod, you got Cano, you got Teixeira, you got Swisher. You got all these guys. So Mr. Granderson's coming in there thinking about how he can influence the team in his own way. And the pitchers decided to, of course, attack him because they don't want to attack Rodriguez. They don't want to attack Jeter. They don't want to attack Teixeira. So he's one of the guys who, you know, is hitting in the mid to back of the order. and is just able to take advantage of the pitchers who don't want to throw too many pitches to, the Hall of Famer like Jeter. So, of course, Mr. Granderson played a stellar game in New York, was able to hold down those lineups, still unfortunately did not win a title post 2009, really unfortunately, but he played extremely well. And I really like his insight into playing in New York and having to take in, the vibes of the stadium and how he was able to take advantage of the build of the stadium, even though he was not there when it was being constructed. He was there the year after, of course. But he was able to take New York and use it to his advantage in the best way possible. So it's just great to hear a little insight into how Mr. Granderson decided to play his little game inside of New York. Next question, we're going to head on to Mr. Granderson, of course, known as an incredible triples hitter, which is not a stat that you usually hear from most guys. So I decided to ask him about his back-to-back seasons leading the league in triples, as well as having one of the best triple seasons of all time, seeing how he was able to make it work right now.
So what was my mindset, especially going early in my career on the base paths offensively? In 2007, I led the league in triples. I think I led the league again in triples in 2008. So that was really cool just to have as many triples as I did. And for me, my biggest thing offensively was try to get a pitch that you can drive and drive it into the gaps. And I started my career in Comerica, very big ballpark. I think they've moved the fences in 3 times since they built that stadium in 2001, I think it is. And I just remember going there as first signing my contract and seeing how big it was. The flagpole that's currently out there in the bullpen was in play, and I think that was 438 feet away. And I'm just sitting there thinking, there's a lot of ground out there to cover. So as I'm coming up throughout the course of my career as a hitter, if I can just go ahead and work with it, get pitches to drive, work gap to gap, then I can just use my legs and go ahead and get out the box and turn singles into doubles and doubles into triples and potentially get a couple inside the park home runs. And that was my philosophy. And that's what I tried my best to do. And the reason I think I had so many triples is I knew how big Comerica Park was. Yes, I had some power, but I never thought that I hit no doubters unless it was straight to the pull side. So if I hit balls well in the middle of the field, I got out the box hard. And if it happened to go over the fence, the umpires would do this and let me know, and then I would slow down. But the worst thing I wanted to have happen to me was it not go over the fence, and I'm at first when I should have been at second, or I'm at second and I should have been at third. So I would always get out the box hard, and balls that possibly were doubles, I was able to continue to keep going, especially if it was hit to right center. It was such a big ballpark out there in Comerica and such a far throw that by the time they got it in, potentially made a relay, I was sliding in safely to third. And I also got to give credit to Gene Lamont. He was our third base coach for the Tigers there. He would start sending me to third, and I always paid attention and I followed him. And we never got thrown out at third on any of those triple attempts. So thank you, Gene Lamont, for being aggressive. And again, just continue to utilize what Comerica Park gave me. Big ballpark, get hard out the box, run it quickly, and use that to my advantage. And that was my philosophy early on in my career.
So there you heard it from Mr. Triple himself, Curtis Granderson. He did lead the league in both 2007 and 2008, had 23 triples in 07, 13 in 08, had a total of a ridiculous number of 95 career triples, which in this day and age, when you have all these guys going for homers, just send it over the fence, send it over the fence. 95 career triples is ridiculous, especially when you compare it with 344 career homers. So with the Yankees, he had 7-10, 4-2 in terms of triples. But with Detroit, he had a 4-year stretch of 9-23, 13-8. So just taking advantage of, as he said, Comerica's dimensions. The stadium has very wide outfield walls, and they're able to go back very far, especially when he played. So being able to take advantage of all that outfield grass, just smoke it into a place where it's hard to field and just turn on the jets. And that's what he did. He always made sure to get out the box hard, not do this little home run trot that gets a lot of guys thrown out nowadays, Cough, cough, Josh Donaldson. But anyway, a great part of Mr. Granderson's game was his triples. That was probably the biggest standout during his career. Don't get me wrong, he also could steal some bags, 153 stolen bags in his career, and also knew how to place the ball. He could hit singles, doubles, triples, homers, whatever you wanted. But the triples are really what stands out when you look at his career and his amazing hitting stats, a career OPS plus of 113. But just that mindset of always being able to grab that extra bag whenever it's possible shows the mental fortitude throughout his career, how he's able to play for so long and keep consistent at such a great pace for the entirety of his career. Just a great mindset to have for any ball player, especially at that level. And now we're going to head to the third point. Not so much about him, but more so about his teammates. What teammates stood out to him? We're about to find out.
In regards to different teammates I've had over the course of my career, were there any that just stood out, not only from just personality, athletic ability, good teammate, all those things combined? There's a couple that jump at me. Probably one of my closest teammates throughout the course of my career is current big league hitting coach Marcus Thames of the Chicago White Sox. Him and I were teammates with the Tigers and also teammates with the Yankees. And we just formed this bond together. We both made the team in 2006 with the Tigers. Went to that World Series together, had just such a great time, and then we've always stayed in touch. He's from Mississippi. I have family and roots from Mississippi. So we had a lot of different connection points, and him and I still talk a lot to this day about a number of different things, not necessarily baseball related, just a bunch of different topics. So he's always somebody I've been really close with. And then, getting a chance to play for the captain and Derek Jeter over there with the Yankees, one of the things that I always admired about him was the fact that if you think about over the course of his career, the number of teammates that he had, the number of eyeballs that were consistently on him, the number of people that knew him and recognized him and were fans of him, the fact that he went through all that, and especially as players would join his team like I did, getting traded over there in the offseason of 2009 going into 2010, he had a lot of people that he would have to come in contact with, and he could choose to be however he wanted to with them. Either he could have looked at them and said, "Hey, I've seen this play out before. We've traded this player for a very short period of time. They're only going to be with us for a little bit, so I'm not going to open up to that person fully." Or, "This player just got called up and is going to get sent down soon. So same thing, I'll be respective. I'll be, somewhat approachable, but I'm not going to go all in because we're ultimately going to move some pieces around." Or he can do the reverse, which is what he did. He was as open and as welcoming and as enduring as you can imagine. He always came up and introduced himself to not only myself, but any player that joined that team. He said, "Hey, if you ever need anything, let me know." He was always willing to go out to eat with you, to invite you over to his place, and all those great things. I really respected that. And I know that seems like what a teammate should do, but again, take a step back. Look at how long he played. Look at how the Yankees operated that organization. I mean, they rolled in players left and right, left and right. And he's the captain. All eyes are on him. Everybody wants to go to him. And you can handle it a number of different ways. And the way that he handled it, I truly respected it. And he was one of the best teammates that I ever had. So truly proud and privileged and appreciative that I got a chance to play with him.
One of my favorite parts of being able to interview professional athletes is seeing the type of person they are, the type of person they interact with outside of their respective sport. Of course, you watch the guys on the TV and you see, oh, this guy can hit homers. This guy can run in touchdowns from the 20-yard line. He's incredible. But what I really like to get to know is the people themselves, especially guys like Mr. Granderson and Mr. Hunter Pence. I had a conversation with him. Absolutely amazing dude. Same with Mr. Granderson. But just seeing their personal lives outside of purely the game of baseball is amazing. For instance, his connection with Mr. Thames, a 1.9 career WAR, but he was a guy who was with Mr. Granderson for a long time in Detroit, in New York. Just a guy that it seems like Mr. Granderson was able to go back to all the time. And that's just a friendly connection that you need, especially when you're playing pro ball. Not everything's sunshine and rainbows, despite what you may think it is. Playing baseball is physically and mentally straining. So having a guy that you can sit back there with and just enjoy some time together is amazing. And that's what it seems like Mr. Thames was to Mr. Granderson. But also, you got Derek Jeter. And he said it as good as you could. He's the captain. Everybody's flocking to him. But the fact he was able to take minutes out of his day to be able to interact with everybody and always be there in need is incredible. It just shows the type of man that Derek Jeter is, the type of captain he was, leading the Yankees to all those championships. So you know that he was great in the locker room. But another, just maybe the first time I've interacted with someone who's interacted with Jeter for a long period of time. But just hearing that story from Mr. Granderson, based on how many stories I've heard otherwise about how great of a man Jeter is, really just makes me happy knowing he was the captain of my team for so long and always made every teammate feel welcome, always made every fan in the stadium feel like they were watching something special. And it's amazing to hear these stories from these ball players, just being able to connect with you less so on a baseball basis and more so on a personal basis. So those were the two teammates that Mr. Granderson, enjoyed his time with and wanted the world to know about. So I really appreciate Mr. Granderson's time and all the efforts he put into getting these videos to me. Thank you so much to everyone with the Curtis Granderson Foundation as well. I really, really appreciate it. This was such a fun episode to film and put together. So I hope you all were able to, learn a bit more about Mr. Granderson. Maybe check out his highlights on YouTube or, anything. Maybe support his foundation. I bet he would really appreciate it. So that's going to be it for this episode of the Playoff Push Podcast, episode 12. I really appreciate all of you guys listening, as always. From myself and Mr. Granderson, thank you for watching this episode. Have a great rest of your night.